Hey leaders, before we get into this episode, I wanted to tell you about a free event that I'm hosting, your Personal Leadership Audit Live Workshop. I've put the workshop together because if you want to stand out as an exceptional leader, you have to know yourself, inside and out. Understanding your strengths and weaknesses is critical, and for that, you need a high degree of self-awareness and a commitment to self-reflection. Now, if you're committed to unlocking your leadership potential, then working through a self-assessment like this is going to help you to quickly identify a path to higher impact. I'll be leading you through a deep dive into the 7 imperatives of my No Bullshit Leadership Framework, so that by the end of the session, you'll know exactly what areas you need to develop if you really want to stand out from the crowd. We're only opening up 150 spots, so register now at yourceomentor.com/workshop. That's yourceomentor.com/workshop. Are you selling a little or a lot? Either way, Shopify helps you do your thing. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. It helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. In fact, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And now you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Most of the business owners who listen to No Bullshit Leadership want to go large. What's so cool about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, it gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/leadership, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/leadership now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/leadership.
Hey leaders, Em here. We're finalizing Marty's 2024 speaking calendar and he still has a few opportunities available. Now you've experienced the impact that Marty has on the podcast, but that's only a tiny fraction of the impact that he has when he delivers an in-person keynote presentation. If you'd like to book Marty to speak at your organization's event, go to martingmore.com or send us an email at hello@martingmore.com and we can chat about how to tailor his powerful message to your leaders to achieve real results. All right, now back to the episode.
Welcome to the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. In a world where knowledge has become a commodity, this podcast is designed to give you something more. Access to the experience of a successful CEO who has already walked the path. So join your host, Martin Moore, who will unlock and bring to life your own leadership experiences and accelerate your journey to leadership excellence.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 290 of the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. This week's episode, Stakeholder Mastery, moving from chaos to control. In last week's episode, I outlined the 10 key ingredients that contribute to your promotability. In doing so, I realized that after almost 300 full-length episodes of No Bullshit Leadership, we hadn't yet produced one that deals specifically with the key discipline of stakeholder management. Well, this is it. In today's complex organizational structures, the amount of influence you can wield, and therefore your ability to achieve results, depends on how well you build your most critical relationships. As you move into more senior roles, your ability to identify and influence key stakeholders becomes increasingly important. If you don't pay attention, your relationships are likely to be chaotic and volatile, and this directly impacts your performance. The best leaders do what's needed to master their stakeholder ecosystem, taking it from chaos and unpredictability to control and alignment. In this episode, I explain how to avoid the pressures, the politics and the failures that ultimately eventuate when relationships are left to chance. I'll start by helping you to identify who your stakeholders are and work out which one of these are the most important to your success. I'm then going to give you a few guidelines for building stakeholder trust. I'll talk about the importance of being deliberate in your stakeholder interactions and engagement. and I'll finish with a few words on escalation strategies. So, let's get into it. This episode is super practical, probably even more so than most. I'm going to launch straight into some instructions for identifying and managing your stakeholders. If you're listening to it on the go, as I'm sure many of you are, you may want to come back to it when you have a quiet 15 minutes at your desk with a pen and paper. And even, dare I say it, a spreadsheet. Any interaction with people outside your immediate team usually indicates that a level of cooperation and collaboration is required in order to get the job done. Now, while this is a great place to start your thinking, of course, not every stakeholder is equal. Listing everyone you interact with will potentially give you an extremely long list. And as I'm sure you've already worked out, some stakeholders are going to be much more critical to your success than others. Given how limited our bandwidth actually is to absorb information, interact with others, and focus our attention, we need a way to rank the value of our relationship with each stakeholder. But in order to begin, it's worth listing everyone you interact with as a baseline. We can refine it from there. For each identified stakeholder, you might consider the following attributes. How important are they to your success? How frequent are the touch points you have with them? What are the typical issues you face with that relationship? What risk does this stakeholder present to the successful performance of your team? What motivates them? How active are they with your other critical stakeholders? How often should you and your team maintain contact? What level should your team engage at? How do you synchronize communications? And if you needed to escalate an issue due to an impasse, how would you do that? You can track as many or as few properties about your stakeholders as you find useful. But those are just a couple of suggestions to get you going. Once you know who your stakeholders are, you can map each of them on a simple 2x2 matrix. As many of you know, I've spent years studying business and management, and I've worked with some of the most elite consulting firms on the planet. My conclusion from all of this is simple. If you map anything on a 2x2 matrix, it will feel smart. But in all seriousness, a stakeholder matrix can be really useful as a visual representation to help you work out where you need to place the most attention. The two axes on your matrix are support and influence, and either of those can be high or low. You want to be able to assess how supportive each stakeholder is and how influential they are in the results you're trying to achieve. This is going to provide essential guidance on where to put your time and energy. It's only a qualitative measure, but it's going to help you to visualize how to work with each stakeholder. For example, if a stakeholder has high influence in your ecosystem, then they can either be very effective allies or very dangerous counterparts. You should focus on any stakeholder who you believe has high influence on your outcomes. For those people, you have to ensure they're as high on the support axis as possible. And if you have stakeholders who are incredibly supportive, it's worth thinking about how to make them more influential in your ecosystem. The big dangers come from stakeholders who are highly influential, but not supportive. Your objective is to neutralize the threats and mobilize support. It'll definitely be worth your while to map your stakeholders and spend some time thinking about how to do this. Influencing is a key part of leadership, and leaving it to chance can be a major career derailer. Building trust with your stakeholders can be difficult for one major reason. You don't have much interaction time in which to do it. And this is getting even harder with hybrid and remote work. For me, there's no better model for building trust than the CEO's relationship with the board of directors. A chief executive has limited interactions with the board, and there's also a natural level of separation, which is necessary to ensure the independent governance. But without trust, the relationship between board and management becomes strained. Decisions become overly conservative, and management starts trying to think about how they can go around the board. As a key stakeholder in a CEO's success, high levels of trust have to be built with the board in a very short period of time. But I've used the board example before, so today, without divulging anything that would be considered commercial in confidence, I want to use another example of building stakeholder trust from my time as Chief Executive at CS Energy. We managed to resolve a long-standing dispute with one of our suppliers that was costing us well over $100 million every year in lost revenue. This supplier was a critical stakeholder because it owned the mine that supplied coal to our largest power station, and it was the only viable fuel source for those assets. Not having the right quantity and quality of coal was limiting the amount of electricity that we could generate. The supplier had what we call an onerous contract with CS Energy, which means that in order to fulfill the terms of the contract over its life, the supplier would actually lose money. A lot of money. Now, of course, this made the supplier highly motivated to force us to renegotiate the contract to give them terms that were more commercially sustainable. By the time I got to CS Energy, the dispute had already been going on for almost 10 years, and it had already been the subject of lengthy and expensive court proceedings. There was a massive amount of bad blood on both sides of the negotiating table. I had to rebuild the trust with this supplier so that we could recommence negotiations productively. So guess what the very first thing I did was? To recommence the litigation. Now, this might sound like a strange way to build trust, but it was an important signal to send. We were putting some guide rails around our interactions, effectively saying, hey look, we're prepared to take this all the way, but we prefer to sort it out amicably in a way that's going to be better for all of us if we can. At the same time as bringing this commercial and legal leverage, in parallel, we were rebuilding trust inside the negotiating room. It took years, literally years of meetings, between me and the supplier's top executive in Australia. Both of us had to win each other's trust, and to do so, it meant being open and honest about what our organisations needed in order to solve the problem, being clear about what was and wasn't possible, doing what we said we'd do, being prepared to give some ground in order to create a zone of possible agreement, fighting internally for the concessions that would make a deal possible, and being really clear and strong about our respective boundaries. After almost 3 years of negotiations, we were able to find a solution that allowed the supplier to exit the mine and transfer ownership to a new supplier, whom we were able to strike a new contract with. This deal was one of the key planks in lifting CS Energy's EBITDA earnings from $17 million at the height of the dispute to $441 million at the end of my 5-year tenure. And if I hadn't been able to personally establish that level of trust with a stakeholder who was most influential to those outcomes, both companies would likely still be fighting it out in court today. One of the most important elements of stakeholder management is to create a rhythm of engagement at every level. Continuing my example of the dispute between CS Energy and our coal supplier, we put time, energy, and deep consideration into formulating a plan. Once we'd done so, it was incredibly powerful. We knew exactly which individuals we needed to engage with at every level. We mapped the relationships that needed to be forged, from their global chief executive who was based in London, down to the in-house lawyer in Brisbane who was drafting the legal documents for the court proceedings. We assigned roles and responsibilities for each person. We established processes for ensuring everyone was precisely aligned with the messaging and intent at any given point. We prescribed the frequency that was required for every interaction, and we coordinated this with our team of external lawyers and risk management advisors. I was the lead negotiator, but most of the work was done at the levels below me. We established a rhythm of weekly, monthly, and quarterly meetings where we would meet with our counterparts at different levels in both formal and informal settings. I can't really begin to explain how incredibly sophisticated that stakeholder management strategy had to be. We were living double lives. We were beating the crap out of each other in court, doing lawyers at 20 paces. All the while, each party was trying to extract maximum leverage to ratchet up the pressure in the day-to-day operations. And at the same time, I was trying to engage in a without prejudice commercial negotiation with what was undoubtedly CS Energy's most critical stakeholder. This would have been impossible without a clearly articulated stakeholder management plan. Now, clearly, not every stakeholder relationship is going to be this critical or this complex. You can start much more modestly. Like anything, baby steps. Just taking the simple step of assigning individuals as contact points for your high-influence stakeholders is going to move the needle. You want this to be deliberate, not left to chance. You know who your most critical stakeholders are, so even just a little bit of thought and effort can give you a huge advantage. I just want to finish with a few thoughts on escalation, because not everything is going to go to plan. Sometimes you'll just find yourself in a situation where a high-influence stakeholder simply isn't that cooperative. You may not be able to change that for one reason or another. When this happens, it's easy to fall into a victim mentality. But just remember, more often than not, it's not personal. Still, it's really important to know when and how to escalate. In all likelihood, your stakeholders just have different priorities. They may have different KPIs which aren't aligned with yours. Let's face it, for all the strategic planning that goes on in organisations, most companies are incredibly poor at aligning priorities across different teams and business units. In fact, it would actually be a little surprising if that misalignment didn't exist. But when those mismatches in intent and objective occur, you need a way of dealing with them. Now, the golden rule is, always exhaust every avenue for solving a mismatch in objectives directly with a stakeholder involved. That is, do everything you can to convince them that their cooperation is, in fact, in the best interest of the organisation. Having said that, when you can't influence your stakeholders, despite your best efforts, it's important to have an escalation path that you can use to bring pressure to bear. Obviously, there are some stakeholders for which there is no viable escalation point, like your board of directors. I think a very clear conversation with the individual is an important first step. And to do this properly, you've got to be really comfortable in a conflict situation. I found over the years that the most effective technique is to bring that stakeholder into your world to share the problem and to make it a joint obligation to solve, not just yours. This requires a lot more than just saying, "I've got priorities that I need you to help me with." It's much more effective to say something like, "It seems like our priorities aren't aligned. If we can't figure out a way for both of us to meet our objectives, then we'll obviously need to kick it up the line and let our bosses decide which priorities are the most critical. I'll start with my boss. Why don't you come with me? We can explain our respective positions and solve any mismatches in expectation pretty quickly." Now, this approach is dead set genius for a couple of reasons. As I said, it brings your stakeholder into a shared problem and lays out an obvious shared incentive to solve it. It preserves trust because you don't escalate behind your key stakeholder's back, which could otherwise cause them to become bitter and twisted. But the real kicker is, more often than not, in order to avoid the escalation, your stakeholder is going to actually respond and do everything within their power to accommodate your objectives. Everyone's a winner. When I was dealing with critical stakeholders, I always found it beneficial to identify possible escalation points well in advance of having to use them in anger. What this enabled me to do was to employ what I call soft escalation techniques. For example, when I came across a particularly obstinate stakeholder who just refused to cooperate on my critical deliverables, I just give the CEO a quiet heads up. And it will go something like this. "Hey Wayne, look, I don't want you to do anything at this point, but I wanted to keep you in the loop. I'm working with Patrick to sort it out, but we seem to be at odds about priorities and deliverables. Now, I think you've been pretty clear with me about your expectations for this initiative. I just want you to know that I'm going to apply a little pressure to Patrick. If you don't want me to do that, just tell me now and I'll back off, but hopefully I can resolve it quickly and I won't have to bring you into the loop." This does a few important things. It demonstrates that you are taking accountability for managing your stakeholders. It shows that you're thinking about the highest value outcomes for the company. It shows that you intend to fight your own battles and only escalate as a last resort. And, best ever, it positions you on the moral high ground if you do eventually require intervention. So, wrapping this up, If you can master the relationships with your key stakeholders, you will massively impact the quality of the outcomes that you're able to achieve. Many leaders just allow their most important relationships to evolve by default. But if you can be just a little more thoughtful and pull yourself out of the day-to-day firefighting so that you can proactively manage these relationships, you will see an immediate benefit. Productive alliances with your stakeholders are built through trust, shared objectives, robust conversations, and a focus on the greater good. If you want to start a virtuous cycle of stakeholder mastery, you may need to be the bigger person. So think about the stakeholder relationship that you're finding most challenging right now. If you apply some of the techniques we've just covered, there's no reason why you can't begin to improve that critical relationship today. All right, so that brings us to the end of episode 290. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, at Your CEO Mentor, our purpose is to improve the quality of leaders globally. So please make sure you subscribe to No Bullshit Leadership on your favorite podcast player. I look forward to next week's episode, Keeping Your People Safe. Until then, I know you'll take every opportunity you can to be a no bullshit leader.